extend a subcommittee meeting now. So we're going to start with the standard subcommittee meeting. We didn't go around and introduce. I don't think we need to do that, right?
Yeah,
we all know each other.
Yeah. And we still have no conflict.
So the agenda, basically, as you have it in front of you, says welcome and introductions. So welcome, and we all have been introduced. HIPAA report to Congress, finalize any edits. So we finalize the edits and got approval. So the next steps, so that you know, we're going to work with Aub and Terry to finalize the report. I think we're all going to do a final read also, you know, kind of step back and read it now fresh and probably correct a few other consistencies or inconsistencies and then finalize it and send it to Debbie for the final publication. I did notice, actually, that when we converted, and Marietta, I don't know if you did this, but when we converted the Word document into the PDF and posted it on the web, if you go to page 32, there is a half of the page is missing, and then in several pages there's the similar thing. There's sections that are gone and are for that. That means basically the PDF generator, you know, basically didn't do a good job of generating the PDF. So we'll have to, once we generate the PDF, we'll have to go through, of course, you know, we'll delete the draft in the background once the report is final and then generate the one. And then there will be the official formal submission to the appropriate committees and
right,
all that process.
Right. And it's a little different process than going to letter to the secretary because it's going to the Congress and all of that. So we'll, we've done that before and we'll work it out again.
What's the timeline for that? I mean, what somebody was asking earlier.
I think we're looking at, depending on when we get it from you and Larry, and because I know I'm going to look it over word by word by the weekend, and by the next week we should have a nice clean draft.
Oh yes, early next week,
yeah. And then from there, that's when we start processing it for the congressional.
But we talked about not posting it at all until the secretary.
Well,
the final one,
the secretary gets the letters. So the whole thing is for the congressional, for the recipient to get it.
It's to the Congress, not to the secretary.
No, but we wouldn't be posting it online
until the recipient gets it. So
until the recipient gets it.
Until the committees receive it.
Right, and that's just out of protocol. Just for that.
Yeah.
And then we can talk later about dissemination afterward. We have our nice 10th report, which I wondered how that could be outdone, and then here we get this gorgeous 11th report, and we're not sure about printing capability that we're in now. We're in such digital age and stage, but I'll follow up with you as to the best way of disseminating. As you know, that 10th report got a lot of traction. There were various meetings. People really enjoyed, you know, getting that, and it got swooped up. So we'll make good use out of it.
Okay. So the next topic, which is not actually listed here before we go to the subcommittee work plan, is the public health letter. So we also have approval of the letter with the caveat of drafting a little introductory statement that for this being the first letter to this new secretary makes sense. Someone, actually, Donna suggested something that I thought would be also good, although not necessarily from the committee, but this letter is the committee letters, which was actually writing a separate, short, half one-page letter that welcomes the new secretary and introduces the national committee to the secretary. And that serves as sort of a cover to our public health letter.
Mm-hmm.
That's one other way to handle that part. Mm-hmm. Of course, we would need to draft the letter tonight and present it tomorrow to the full committee for approval. Something like that.
Or submit a sentence or two.
Well, exactly. The two options are we do just one letter with the introduction, welcome, and sort of giving more detailed background, or we write two letters. One is introduction, welcome.
Or maybe there's another option. Maybe what we can do is if we want to say, hi, this is who we are to the new secretary, couldn't that be done with a between staff and Larry, and then that's separate from us? And
Sure. Yeah, well, I suggested it actually to when Jim was presenting this morning his update. I mentioned the ability to perhaps meet with the secretary, and they, of course, they have a whole host of individuals that will be, the whole department is going to begin to introduce themselves and all the people that they work with to the secretary in different stages, I'm sure. So we are one of the hundreds of groups that need to become, be made aware of to the secretary. So my sense is, my preference would be just to have one single letter as we have it, just an introduction, you know, and extending a little bit more the description of the national committee, and that be it. And then
separate letter.
No, just one single letter. The public health letter will have that introduction and that welcome, rather than having two letters, because the problem is if we have a second letter, we have to write it tonight and present it tomorrow.
No, we don't have to.
We don't want
to.
Go ahead, Terry.
Okay, we crafted just what the introduction would be, the preface of just having one letter as opposed to having an introduction letter. And we'll just start out, it's a privilege to welcome you as the new secretary of the department. We are submitting to you your first letter and recommendations from the National Committee on Vital Health Statistics, NCVHS, and then go right into the
Jump right into that.
Oh, excellent. Done.
Yeah, so are you
that's perfect.
That as a
you go to your opposes to that?
Instead of having a second cover letter,
that accomplishes.
I mean, that's exactly what Jack said.
If that accomplishes.
Perfect.
Perfect. So we're done with that.
So we're done.
Just so you
So confirm, we're going to have one single letter, which will be the public health letter with that introduction.
Yes.
One single letter.
You got an email from.
Yeah.
As a caveat, we need to get this into the secretary's hands and things like this as far as background information about the committee and the things. So we'll do communication with her.
Since this is the first letter, we can reference that, actually.
I mean, we'll find a way. So this actually is another, just so she'll know the extent, 50 years of work, and then the letter, and then, don't feel that the letter has to be the introduction. We need to let her know. We've been around a bit and doing a lot.
Good. Okay. So there will be a separate process.
Yeah.
That's done.
So
yes.
The letter is complete.
Done. Right. Okay, so we don't need a motion or anything like that. We're done.
Thank you.
All right. Subcommittee work plan. So let me show you the work plan that we have been using through the quarter, different quarters, just to remind you of all the work that we've been doing. This is the work plan that we actually presented at our February meeting, and we talked about it. And I just put a cover, basically. I said June, but this is the same slide. I didn't change anything. So we had in quarter one what we said we were going to do. NCPDP prior authorization, which we did, operating rules for remaining transaction, and update on WEDI. This is all the hearing really that we had in February, actually. You can see here NCVHA and the ACA review committee. So we started that conversation back in those months, and that's what is culminating here with what Jim was presenting earlier. February hearing on operating rules, so we held that. We collaborated with Population Health on a possible second hearing. We put a question mark, so we haven't really finalized or decided to go with a second hearing yet. And then we prepared the letter on public health standards and completion of the HIPAA report. So I think we completed quarter one. Quarter two, we're going to continue the e-health vision and roadmap discussion. That we haven't done. We operating rules for remaining transactions discussion. I think we heard an update also this hearing yesterday. Claim attachment regulations, very hopeful that they were going to be possibly out. We heard actually that they're not going to be out in the near future, that they are still, I think the whole industry is still determining whether We do have a defined and final set of standards to adopt officially through regulations, and so that is now being pushed out. We do have a deadline with respect to attachments that you should all be aware of, which is January 1st, 2016. That's when the Affordable Care Act provision says that the adoption of attachments and implementation of attachments should happen. So we have 18 months to, I guess, CMS regulators to draft and prepare any final rules and then have a deadline for compliance with the final rules with respect to claim attachments. We were going to actually work on a work plan for the review committee just to propose, but I think we didn't have really much time to do it, and now we are awaiting, are going to be awaiting the official designation by the secretary to be the review committee so that then we can define a work plan. And then some of the convergence work we highlighted in this work plan. And, of course, we had the June hearing yesterday, and we mentioned here completion of the letter of public health data standards, which we did, completion of the HIPAA report, and then begin to draft the letter of recommendations on administrative hearing, so yesterday's hearing. So we will need to begin to do that. I think that's one of the next steps over the next few months. And then, again, the work group on the review committee, this, of course, is pending the designation from the secretary. The quarter three and quarter four, I don't think we have it yet to define. Well, this is what we had back in February. So in quarter three, quarter four, we have here the e-health vision and roadmap. The goal was to try to finalize the discussion. ICD-10 implementation, look at that. How about that? Well,
okay. Changing year to 15.
Yeah. Initial implementation of the review committee work plan.
10% is.
And we even put health plan HPID enumeration because that was originally one of the plan. Now, of course, the HPID enumeration is scheduled to be happening October 2015 with the intent of implementing it October 2016. So we're still a year away, a year and a few months away. So this were the topics we were going to cover. Hearings. So we didn't really lay out any hearings. We mentioned possible follow-up hearing on public health data standards on certain topics, and that's something we can talk about, again, with population health and discuss whether at one point it makes sense to bring back the entire group that we brought in November and have another hearing. I know a lot of those organizations are very, first of all, they were very excited about the letter that we prepared, and they are very excited to know and to be able to engage with the committee. And so here we have another big important audience. Right now, of course, the big audience we have is our HIPAA implementation audience, all the people that have come to our hearings, and yesterday we saw them incredibly showing up, and that is a major audience that we have. Now we open the door for this new audience, this new group of people. These are all the public health associations, NACHO, ASTO, NAFSIS, ASTO, I mean, CSTE, all these groups that have been involved in helping develop and implement public health standards. So they're very much a captive audience for us, and we can bring them back to talk more about the standards in specific topics. We had thought about doing a possible third roundtable on e-health vision and standards roadmap. And that's still a possibility for Q3 and 4. So right now, since we are sort of at a point where we have completed our HIPAA report, we don't have to think about a HIPAA report for a few more months or maybe hopefully a year. And then we have sort of finished up the first round of all these letters. We only have the letters coming from the hearing yesterday. We can consider the second part of this year, so basically Q3 and 4, to focus on sort of stepping back and looking at the roadmap that we have been really asked to look into, as well as, again, this public health standard. So those are two possible topics to consider for Q3 and 4. So that's it. Basically, that's a work plan. Just to finish up, basically, the expectation between now and September. So what do we need to do between now and September? As a subcommittee, I think we want to continue our meetings that we've been doing almost on a monthly basis to be able to draft and prepare the draft letters that we will be putting together from yesterday's hearing. And I'm talking about letters, maybe not single letter. Could be a single letter, could be more than one. And then reviewing them and discussing them so that we can bring them back to the full committee in September. That's one of the big priorities. But in addition to that, or separate from that, I think we will need to talk about the review committee pending the designation from the secretary. We'll need to talk about the roadmap and how we're going to recapture and reconvene around that. And I think we need to talk about any additional work on the public health standards side in partnership with the population health workers. There could be also some topics to talk about in partnership with the privacy and security work group, as we talked about earlier this today.
Yeah.
So those are sort of maybe four major topics to consider discussion over the next 4 or 5 months. So, okay.
I'd like to entertain just an idea that we talked about earlier when Jim teed up the concept of, or teed up the issue around the review committee. I wonder if we couldn't, once we get the approval, okay, and designation, if we couldn't bring together that roadmap and vision work together with the review committee work. In other words, use a single sort of set of deliverable, you know, to drive not only so that when we do the report, it's really not only to look at, you know, up and coming operating rules and standards, but also to achieve the strategic vision.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought. That way we don't have to. That way we truly can, you know, converge to.
I was thinking the same thing, that, you know, getting a handle up front as to what the, you know, what the metrics and milestones are to be looked at as part of that review would be really helpful. So that the review isn't just a list of what got done, but substantively what's the impact.
We already had the principles. Remember, we spent a lot of time crafting the principles.
But we don't have the metrics yet.
Not yet. But the principles should help guide us in our review work.
Yes, I think that would be all, exactly. Those two are really tied. The review committee and the roadmap are perfect tying. And so we'll just have to wait to see what happens with the designation, really. But in the meantime, we can begin to flesh out again during one of our calls, some more next steps regarding the roadmap that can, again, be brought up as part of the review committee work plan.
I think Jim heard that right today, but I'm not sure whether we need to reiterate that with Jim.
Okay. Any other topics?
So review committee and roadmap are the same work, right? So.
Yeah. I'm making note of .
I have a question.
Yes, Raj.
Data silos are big in trying to merge everything and come to a convergence. Some of the committees, some of the people are using SNOMED and LOINC, and we're still going with ICD-10s. Okay? We're creating these huge silos by going with ICD-10s. Is there any dialogue or a talk to merge into something that can be unified so that the data transmission can be seamless?
Yeah, well, as far as I know and the way I see it, we do the three. In fact, we do more vocabularies and terminologies. We code on SNOMED and LOINC, and for public health, we use actually CDC's coding, and then we also use ICD-10 mostly for billing and administrative purposes, but also for other public health reporting. There are already resources out there that do mapping of the coding systems. In fact, Kaiser Permanente developed something called the Convergence Medical Terminology, which was donated to the Library of National Library of Medicine and is now on public domain, which is a one way of describing it is a Rosetta Stone of vocabularies and terminologies. It really serves as a connection between SNOMED, LOINC, ICD, PPT, and other codes. And so if you have an ICD-9 code, you can see what the 10 code is, what the SNOMED terminology or terms are, what any LOINC code is, and what CPT code might be related to it, too. And you can extend it to HCPCS and other types of codes. So there is already that map in place and available in public domain.
Yeah, but the map, the process is one step more to go to the map and do it. It's much more elaborative and expensive to go to the map and map the ICD-10 to a SNOMED code or LOINC code and do this. One step, I mean, if we can unify all those three things and eliminate the confusion by going to one code uniform to everybody, that will be easier.
To Raj's point, I don't believe ICD-10 is one of the 12 standard terminologies Standards Committee recommended to HHS in November of 2011. SNOMED is.
Well, actually, ICD-10 is in the standard.
I think it's in that transmittal letter.
Meaningful use to, yeah. And
so in two, but not three.
Well, three hasn't yet been pushed.
Yeah, but the plan was that it would not be in three. It may have changed. So, yeah. To Raj's point, ICD-10, one of the problems with it is that SNOMED is a much better designed terminology that
for
more clinically
for a very specific purpose. You cannot bill using SNOMED. You can bill using ICD and CPT, but you cannot bill with SNOMED. Doesn't lend to billing coding.
No, it's not the statistical international statistical measures.
Nor to exact.
But you know, I think. This discussion is a really good one, and maybe not this year, but I would think that next year we need to balance the focus on ACA with some time on vocabularies and classifications as a standard subcommittee. Certainly there's update and progress reports on ICD-10 maintenance, ICD-11 development, what's going on with SNOMED.
In fact, ICD-10 is not one of the 12 standards that the Standards Committee formally recommended in the transmittal letter that Farzad sent on September 9th, 2011. And SNOMED is, to Raj's point.
Would that be because they're focused on what's used in a clinical document set as opposed to an administrative financial set?
It's what I said. It's because it's better designed, it's better behaved, it is because for all kinds of reasons, it is one of the things that's needed to characterize patient care. And the billing issue is a definitional issue. I mean,
I don't know that we are saying different things necessarily. It is part of meaningful use right now. Meaningful use requires EHRs to be capable of supporting ICD-10.
ICD-10 is acceptable.
Now there's no argument that for clinical purposes, SNOMED is the most appropriate terminology. There's no argument about that. But there's no argument either that when you are converting a clinical encounter into a administrative transaction like a claim, you have to change from SNOMED to something. And that something right now is ICD-9, and it's expected to be ICD-10. You have to. There's just no way.
But there is substantial controversy whether 10 makes more sense than 11. You know, so Raj has a fair point. And the committee has stated that it thinks going to 10 is the right thing to do, and that's also a fact. But Raj's point is fair, that is not an uncontroversial position. And, you know, we wrote an editorial to Lampka and Overidge and whoever it was, Rischel and whoever, and I wrote an editorial several years ago that proposed we just wait and go to 11. So it's not nuts. It's just not the committee's position.
But the argument of waiting and going to 11 still creates two different codes, so there's no difference in Raj's argument.
The other thing to Raj's point, if you want to get technical, is you need about 5,000 ICD-something codes if you decide to use ICD for billing, and you don't need the rest. So in a rational system, you could say we're going to code everything in SNOMED, and then whenever we need to drop a bill, we'll know how to translate the SNOMED into one of the 5,000 or so you would need to actually drop bills. So
that's exactly what is done. What can be done.
The other point is no SNOMED conversion to administrative reasons for playing this. Why don't we put the onus on the administrative aspects to change their code for billing purposes rather than asking the physicians to change now to ICD-10 and move on to something else in the future? It's so cost prohibitive for physicians.
Move
to
what else?
I mean, ICD-11 is going to come.
ICD-11, which is a better designed.
It's already.
By the time we move to ICD-11, probably all of us will be retired, and who knows what else. But I mean, to be fair, I mean, I hope you're not saying, because this is a critical part, I hope, Raj, you're not saying that we should only use SNOMED for clinical and billing purposes. Just to be clear,
for uniform system, so that the physicians don't have to bear the cost of converting from one system to another and to another.
Well, I mean, yeah, but in order to generate a bill and to process a bill and a claim, you need a coding system like ICD. You cannot do coding. You cannot do billing, bill processing with SNOMED. That's just a symbol. You cannot. It's impossible. I mean, you have to create so much intelligence and so much, because SNOMED is a system of terms. It's a system of terms that includes some codes and includes some other basic clinical terms, but it's not a billing system. So I mean, the reality is, we need a coding system for billing purposes, and certainly for clinical coding, there is already a defined coding system called SNOMED that is required. I don't think there is any issue with that. I think what you are saying is, ideally behind the scene, the physician doesn't have to do, okay, for clinical I have to code with SNOMED, here's the code. And then now I'm generating the bill, so now I have to change and do the ICD. The system behind the scenes is intelligent enough to generate, by mapping SNOMED into ICD, to generate the bill and send it out. The physician doesn't need to even do anything. They just code on SNOMED. So there's no, the silo concept is not, in my mind, in my view, a silo concept as long as you can do the mapping and there is already tools to do the mapping. That's Bill.
We had a very interesting conversation at lunch. Sometime we really do need to put some substantive discussion into this, because I at least believe that we have proceeded down a very slippery slope of incrementally adding things to things we transmit with bills and expanding billing codes, because we have them and we can do that and we run the transactions through everything. So it's been the simplest thing to do. And, you know, you know, I'm in the group that, although I support what this committee has said, believe that ICD-10 went over the hump of what was actually useful to try to actually include in the billing system. The reason for that is that the granularity of information we need to characterize patients from either a treatment point of view or a risk point of view is much greater than can be than currently can be documented, I believe, in any of those systems. And my example is to go to cancers. You know, we've classified cancers as lung cancer and different types of lung cancer and colon cancer and different types of that and pancreas cancer. You know, we now know that the protein profiles of and genotypes of the tumors, not the patients, are in fact the distinguishing characteristics, both in terms of response and in terms of treatment. And so, I suspect that the label, I mean, I think we will discover that lung cancer is a useless label, and categorizations built on it are useless. And so as you think about a coding structure that changes very rapidly, as we've experienced, and our understanding of biology that's changing a lot more rapidly, we're going to have to get it where we have a way to access, even for purposes, if we are trying to risk adjust payment, for example, we're going to have to be able to access that rich clinical information. And I think it's going to somehow be accessed in some means that is similar to some of the things we're talking about in the interoperability stuff, or, you know, even back to PCAS 2010, because you're not going to, it's going to be too rich to be able to send through a transaction processing system. It's, the example I used at lunch was it's like people that send, 26 megabyte digital pictures through their email instead of putting it on a site and sharing them. So I think we're getting to that break point. And I think one of the things that we could do in our vision leading is actually show people that we need to put different techniques side by side in a way that let us really cut back on the complexity a little bit. And I think that's really was one of Jen's points. We should be able to cut way back on the complexity of what we have to send through billing transactions. But it takes a very
different... You said it far better. Thank you.
Well, let me ask you this, though. When you say we need to cut back to simplify, make it... But in reality, you're actually saying, in order to understand the complexity of a condition in a patient, you need even more information than what systems or coding systems like ICD can transmit.
Right, and I don't think they're going to be transmitted in any coding system.
Right.
I don't think they're going to be represented in a coding system. I think they're going to be a complex digital signature of a set of attributes, and maybe those attributes can be represented in coding systems, but if so, they're going to be a lot more like gene oncology than SNOMED or ICD.
So the idea is, I think for today's purposes of getting the claims paid, ICD-10, going forward, ICD-10 will be it. That's the position. However, in the future, the point is, if we have to do risk adjustment, it would be more and more complicated. ICD-10 will continue, the billing will continue to exist, but to augment that information may not need to come through the ICD code, right? For example, you can grab conditions perhaps more quickly through third party as opposed to having those conditions be submitted. Now, that's too simplistic, but that's the idea. Instead of having to code everything through ICD-10, is that right?
Yes, but I'm in the court that would have never let ICD. I mean, I like international ICD-10.
Yeah.
I think American ICD-10 oversteps what needs to be done. I understand it's what we're going to do. No problem with that. But I think, but it is a level of complexity that we certainly don't want to add to.
That's the point. So you augment it,
and I think we can
outside of
track from it.
Right.
I think also that the language in the ICD-10s and ICD-9s is so complex for ordinary physicians to comprehend. They don't know what to code. and they leave it to the billers to code it. And the billers select the code that pays the highest. It's totally irrelevant to what the actual patient is having. That's the problem with ICD-10. It doesn't correspond to a language that the physicians are used to. That's what's happening.
And I think we need, you know, as we look ahead, you know, we need to be driving toward a day when all of this is behind the scenes. You know, I don't think the physicians should have to pick any of this, that the mappings and, you know, those, it should be rule-driven. And certainly by the time we get to ICD-11, you know, but we don't have the mechanisms for changing versions and managing vocabularies and, you know, those just aren't capabilities that we have the tool set for yet. But we should be using, you know, other classifications for oncology.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many other ways of taking the same data and recasting it for, depending on the analytic purpose.
And I think it's already happening. I mean, I think physicians are not coding ICD-10s to send bills. They use coders and billers, coders basically internally to handle the billing, and they code an encounter using more of their natural language, medical language, like you know, SNOMED and other things. And then behind the scenes, either the system is intelligent to translate that, or will be intelligent to translate that into a coding mechanism that is appropriate for billing, or there is coders specialized in reading the notes and converting it into code. So I think it's a very important discussion that I think we're capturing it here in terms of something that we need to have a more in-depth talk about. Is what is part of the reimbursement of the future, because this ties a lot about reimbursement and risk adjustment, all the things.
Yeah.
Why do we need to see change to you know, in the future? Because, yes, I mean, on the one end, SNOMED is way too granular and it will be impossible to handle for billing purposes. On the other end, ICD-10 might still be too granular. In some cases, it might not be granular enough to determine risk adjustment, appropriate risk adjustment.
I think part of what, at least what I would say, I think maybe part of what Bill is saying is that right now it's diabetes type 2 and, you know, maybe there's comorbidity. Well, we know that type 2 diabetes is really, what, 40 or some fairly large number of entities, all of which have a fairly similar final common pathway. Well, when we get that worked out and we start saying you should use metformin for these 12 versions of what we used to call diabetes type 2, and you should start with a sulfonylurea for these 24, then where are we going to be with ICD whatever? We're going to have to pull that whole thing out and put a whole new thing in. I think that's the problem, is I don't think we have quite conceived how dynamic our understanding of diagnostic entities is going to be in the next decade or two. ICD anything, maybe 11, but not 9 or 10, is just not at all designed to be able to manage that kind of dynamism.
Yeah. I mean, my sense is in the future, it doesn't matter what is behind the scenes done. You can plug in ICD 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever. In the front end, the provider's going to be using SNOMED.
It'll all be hidden from the provider, and you're right. Right now, it already is in good system.
Yeah.
That's not the point. The point is that I think it's brilliant. You know, it's like sending a 22-meg picture through your email. You can do it. It may wreck your recipient's reception. But it's a dumb way to do it, and at some point you're going to run into enough volume or enough something else that it's just going to break on you. That's all.
Yeah. So, Larry, you have the last question coming before we go to our next stop.
About next year.
No, we have a speaker to present. So, do you have a question?
Have you completed next steps?
Yes.
No, I just wanted to say maybe we should get to our speaker.
Oh, okay. So then do you have it? Okay. All right. That's good. So, yeah, thank you for all that. And again, we had actually in the agenda some post-hearing discussion and next steps. We're not going to do that right now. We have a lot of
things to assemble and analyze based on the hearing yesterday. We will be doing that and then sending out to the subcommittee for our first call in the next few weeks. We haven't scheduled those. We'll schedule those, but we'll send you a summary, high-level summary of the themes that we heard. I want to, of course, introduce our invited speaker or guest to the subcommittee, Margaret Weicker. She'll introduce herself, but I just wanted to mention that this topic is something that we want to talk about because it relates to the possible adoption of a set of standards. So I'll leave it to you, Margaret, if you can introduce yourself.
Thank you, Walter. I'm Margaret Weicker. I am chair of the ASCX 12N Insurance Subcommittee. And the Insurance Subcommittee at X12 is responsible for the X12 standards that have been adopted under HIPAA. So this kind of melds the DISMO request and the DISMO report that I gave yesterday with a letter that we sent to Walter and Aub via Terry on April 30th. And this has to do with the DISMO request 1186, as well as then with the letter. And that is in regard to XML schema. Several years ago, we approached the committee, some of the members, about adoption of XML schema. And at that time, it was a fairly new thing that we had developed at X12 and thought it was a good idea, but many more higher priorities. So, you know, what happens? It kind of gets pushed to the bottom. Well, since that time, what we've seen is a lot of companies developing proprietary XML. A lot of this is done for their internal systems, but then some also use it to exchange the data as well. But anytime you have proprietary things, sometimes they're not coded correctly. So you may have proprietary XML that you think meets those HIPAA TR3 guides, but in actuality, you may have coded something wrong. And so there's no clean way to do that when you start developing your own proprietary XML. And as time has gone on, we have found more and more people doing that. At the same time, what X12 did was develop a guideline that allows us to create XML based upon the TR3s. So we have a database that actually houses all the rules, the structures, in regard to those TR3s. And what we've done is we've, using that same database, created XML. So sometimes we may refer to those XMLs as TR3 schema. You may have even heard it called way back when isomorphic XML. But typically we call them either MGUIDE schema or TR3 schema. They are W3C compliant in their structure and their layout. We have had many companies purchase the XML for use, and some of those ask, well, if I use this, is this HIPAA compliant? Now, and some have asked before they bought, some have asked after they bought in regard to that. But we say, well, they have not been adopted under HIPAA, so technically, you cannot say you're HIPAA compliant if you use them because they have not been adopted. However, they're generated from the same database that the TR3 is generated from. So as time has gone on, we have more and more people ask. We have shared the schema with OESS, and basically they're like, well, there's not a lot of demand for this, so we're just going to kind of put it over here too. Well, about that time, several months later, the DISMO request was submitted. X12 did not prompt anyone to go out and submit this DISMO request. This was done all on their own, where they said, basically, we need some standardized schemas for the X12 transaction. So it went through the DISMO process with the other organizations opting in, discussing it in their group. We are not proposing to throw the baby out with the bathwater. in regard to the EDI standards. We see two possible paths to move forward with the XML schema, and these are outlined in the letter. One of these is to NCBHS to recommend that OESS publish an official statement around this, basically via an FAQ type of thing that they have done in the past, where you get a question about the schema and they answer in regard to the schema. They could also put it in a notice. They're going to have to create a notice for the HPID. There's also the NPRM that's being created by them for the NCPDP changes, though I don't believe this requires an NPRM, nor does the HPID, but it may be an avenue to announce it, so to speak. So one of the options we believe is through an FAQ type of thing, where they have done that in the past around what's valid, HIPAA, what's not, is this compliant, is that not. And then along the line of the NPRM, but we recommend it be an interim final rule because that tends to be quicker than an NPRM in the life cycle, that basically says these are equivalent of those. So trading partners, we're not saying you must support this now. If you use these schemas, then they are compliant. We're not saying the EDI, throw it away. We're not saying that you have to support both. This is between willing trading partners, whether they want to do this or not. But what we'd like to have done is for NCBHS to make a recommendation that we go ahead and have these adopted as being HIPAA compliant.
So one question I have is, you mentioned, who is this going to affect in the sense that there's a number of organization companies out there that have developed their own proprietary schemas. If this becomes sort of the officially designated name or identified schema, are they going to, what's going to happen with those proprietary schemas? Are they going to have to...
Well, depending on how it's written, I don't think if you have your proprietary schema and these, the adoption pieces, if you use these TR3 schemas, then you are HIPAA compliant. So they run the risk of still remaining to be not HIPAA compliant if they coded it wrong. If they coded it right and it works, they don't need to change at this point. But what we're saying is if they use the X12 generated schema, then you know that you're HIPAA valid schema and you don't have to worry about disagreement between trading partners and all of that.
Margaret, to what degree is there a concern on the liability and the real risk that organizations don't want to take in using this, XML to sort of support other innovative products they want to put out there related to HIPAA transactions? Mm-hmm. And so is actually not having this FAQ and maybe even reinforced through an interim final rule kind of notification stifling innovation?
Potentially.
And if we have the XML schema, from a HIPAA-compliant, format, how does that then translate towards the work that we want to do related to EHR integration and convergence? Is there a better ability for that HL7 and X12?
HL7, a lot of what they're doing is more XML-based. When you look at version 3, it's all XML-based.
Yeah.
So, going from XML to XML is pretty easy. I mean, there's tools that are fairly cheap on the market to do those kind of things, and some open source code even, if you trust open source. But it would ease some of the translation, so to speak, if you had to go back and forth.
This seems like a sort of a no-brainer. Like, why not do this? I mean, and I don't know that an FAQ is going to be enough for some people in the compliance world.
Probably not.
But if we were, it could be both.
Yeah, maybe it is both. An FAQ, which probably can get done, I would hope, a lot quicker, why then the notice that would be done in regard to HPID and that type of thing, maybe it's put in that notice kind of thing.
Go ahead, Alvin. Then
I just want to. I think we need to clarify the XML versus X12. They're two separate, right?
Well,
there's the EDI. I'm going to get to the
yeah,
it's all on the same database.
Yeah.
And from that database, you can produce the TR3, and that's what I'm going to call your legacy. That's your typical EDI that you use today for the most part. The XML is generated from that same database, but instead of it being in the traditional EDI format, it's in an XML format.
So just to understand, because I know people with XML and X12 and all these X's around. So X12 is the body, the company,
right,
the organization that developed the standard. The standard, for example, is the A37. The A37 is the claim. And the implementation guide for the A37 for HIPAA is the one that defines how the data elements on a claim will be put together in an electronic structure. There's a way to create a claim based on the X12 standard in a simple, you know, string, ASCII string. And then there is a way to create that same claim using the X12 standard using XML, the language, the extendable markup language, XML in websites and all sorts of places.
Right.
The standard for the string is everybody uses it, and if that's the X12 EHIPAA guideline, implementation guide. The problem is with the XML, there is a number of companies that have converted the implementation guide into an XML language, and each one has done it differently, and there is concern that people are not really doing it correctly. And so X12, the company, developed a standard XML, the language, XML template,
mm-hmm,
the best way to say it.
Yeah.
And so the recommendation is to make sure that when people are doing XML coding of an X12 transaction, that they use the appropriate template to do it. Someone needs to name the X12 XML template as the standard template for developing XML. Is that correct?
Right.
Correct.
So, I don't understand what I just said.
No. Officially, it's not recognized today.
Today, it is not officially recognized.
XML format is not officially recognized. That's all it is.
Yes.
Does that mean that there's some urgency because it's getting more fragmented and proprietary and divergent as time goes on?
It's going to complicate the enforcement processes for the interpretation of the X12 transactions. Having managed that process for several years for OESS, I can only imagine what's going to happen when they get their first XML compliance-related issue for the proprietary version if it's not tracked back.
Yeah. So, Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, I had several parts to my question. The first one is, have you spoken to OESS to see that this would be able to be handled through an FAQ?
We have approached them. Gladys Wheeler is the person we worked with in regard to an FAQ as well as an interim final rule, and it's what we proposed at the time where we gave the XML for them to evaluate and talk to them. They said that's a possibility, but until they said, we're really going to do this, it just kind of said it was set there, so to speak.
And the other part that I'm concerned about is if you have proprietary fixes, who's going to determine that the fixes that they are being created by different entities are correct and meet the guidelines? Because what happens then is you're going to have multiple ways of doing something,
mm-hmm,
and that goes against the whole administrative simplification.
Right, which is what's happening today,
right,
is you have all of these, you have proprietary XML out in the field today. I know many companies developed their own.
Mm-hmm.
I helped develop some of that for some of those companies. So you have some that's coded correctly, and you have some that is not coded correctly. And in many instances, there may be small impact or it could be huge impact, especially when you start converting into coordination and benefit type of things and data getting dropped and those type of things. So we're not saying, okay, proprietary XML, how do we fix that? Because we can't. Because we don't know the whole universe that's doing it. That has to be validated. That's a lot of work. But what we're saying is, hey, instead of you maintaining and keeping that proprietary XML out there, here's an option to say, yes, if you do this, then you are compliant, and you don't have to worry about somebody calling you and saying you're not compliant, or you dropped this data element, or you didn't convert it right, or those type of things.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
So you're giving an alternative.
I'm giving an alternative.
Okay.
You got to stop the bleeding.
Yeah.
When you mean compliance, are you meaning compliance to a mandate or XTEL as the body?
It's compliant to the TR3, which has been adopted.
The TR3 is the
implementation guide.
The implementation guide for the transaction. So it's compliant with the implementation guide.
Which basically says that here's the type of data that you need. Elements that you need.
Here's the situation when
right.
you send this element. Data element in
you
this format.
It, but now we're saying you can just the traditional approach, which is basically
right.
ASCII, the limited files.
Yeah.
The other one now XML, which is extensible.
Alex, go ahead.
I want to make sure Jim didn't, because you think he was in the queue before me.
Oh, Jim, I'm sorry, I didn't see yours. I'm sorry, I apologize. Yeah, and then Alex.
Thank you, Alex. So. Business question. I mean, this sounds like the right thing to do. From a business standpoint, is this giving X12 a monopoly they could exploit, or are they a public service organization? What's the...
no, that's a very good question. Yeah.
Well, we there's a lot of public service X12 does. X12 as an organization relies on volunteers to do all of its work. So companies donate people to do it. Sometimes they donate a lot of their time. Sometimes they donate a little bit of their time. So if we have mandates where we say we at least cover our cost.
Sure.
But, I'm not sitting there on millions of dollars.
It's clearly one of the things we want to be, document that we consider.
Yeah.
This is more, I think, for me about having the source of truth
right.
consistent with the same source of truth that generates the HIPAA-adopted guides as it is. But along the same questioning of what Jim just asked, I wanted to understand what negatives came out of the DSMO-related discussions on this topic, if there was anything that we needed to understand was why not to do this, and what was the concerns from some of the other organizations in their vetting process?
There really weren't any negatives. We did have discussion on would it be mandated for a health plan or a payer, per se, to support it. That was more of the question of, is this going to be mandated that I now support this? Because maybe I don't want to support XML for whatever reason. So we said, no, that's not what we're doing. We're not saying throw the baby out with bathwater, because there's been too much investment in the legacy system, in those ASCII strings. But what we're saying is for those entities that want to use XML, that want to develop products, that want to do easily convert from HL7 version 3 to X12, here is an option to do that.
All right, any other questions, Linda, and then Larry?
What are you asking us to make a decision today?
Well, I should answer
not
that.
Not today, but, I'd like to have one made today, but
okay.
I'm not demanding one be made today.
I just
we'll have to.
We'll take
it up
on the subject.
We'll have to have a drafting of any possible.
Because I
But it will be done in the next few weeks and,
I wouldn't.
Yeah, and then the letters can be shared that we sent to Ob and Walter. You can look at the actual DSMO request and the response and that kind of thing, because I know you all are tired. You've just been fed by a water hose for the last couple of days. So
I gotta get educated before I vote.
Yeah, no, we'll have some processing of this request.
XML is spelled X.
I know. I even know what it is.
XML is not that thing on the radio.
No.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
thought that was interesting.
I even knew what it was. I just don't know the implications.
Larry, you have the last chance here.
Follow that down, Larry.
Well, I want to re-ask Jim's question. But also, can you just offer in plain language the market pressure that leads to the desire for documents in XML format? What's going on that leads to this development and this situation evolving? What's pushing it?
Well, I can speak from my experience in regard to this. Is, and the company I'm speaking about, I won't name names, but it had many, many customers from many different perspectives, both government, both Medicare, Medicaid, DOD, VA, commercial payers, Blue.
So the thing is, we had a system
that can adjudicate claims, receive the claim, pay the claim. But we'd have one way to come in, which would be the EDI. But then to go to these multiple systems, I'd have to translate the EDI into another format. Well, this one wanted this and this and this. So what we did was standardize the intake of those systems into XML. So it's easy to code, so to speak. There's commercial validators, open source. A lot of people can accept it. You can go into Explorer and actually open XML and read it.
Okay.
So what we did was make a common front end to all of these different adjudication systems to say, now we're going to do one translation. It's going to be an XML. We're sending it to you. So then that system could pick out what they needed based upon the type of adjudication they were doing.
Okay. Well, what was the answer to Jim's question about what advantage does this create for X12?
I don't see, I mean, we're producing the TR3s today, and we create the TR3s today. And yes, we charge for the TR3s because we have development costs. We have to pay a vendor for tools, et cetera. We have to pay for meeting space. So, yes, there's a cost to the TR3 schema. But we're not saying if you use XML, you must only use our XML. What we're doing is saying if you use our XML, then you know that it is a valid HIPAA XML.
But you have been producing the TR3s for some years?
Yes.
And have not abused that effective monopoly.
No. And I wouldn't call it really a monopoly.
Not. Having been the former chair of the committee, they have financial issues because they haven't had a good revenue stream. So at best, what this looks to me like it's going to do is give them a little bit extra revenue stream that'll help with the overall standards development process, and it probably won't even be that much revenue.
We're not making millions off of this. And like I said, the most we make is we try to cover our costs.
From the industry perspective, people who actually have to use these things,
we're
already way ahead. Yeah. We're already using XML. I know exactly what you're talking about. We're already exchanging XML today with entities. We're trying to get caught up here with
your perspective, X12 is a public service.
Yes.
Absolutely. In fact, XML
is getting caught up here.
X12 was not an independent organization until just recently when it formed a non-profit, became a non-profit with a board of directors, all of which are members of X12, and members of X12 are basically providers, payers in the industry that come
to. So our blessing this in some way would be roughly analogous to the Standards Committee blessing SNOMED.
Or X12 or HO7 or any of the other ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. All right, so just to finish up, because I know we're a little over fashionably our time. So we will be summarizing this. We will be bringing it back to the subcommittee. We'll have some conversations with OESS about appropriate processes and all that, and then we'll present it back as a recommendation and bring it back to the full committee. How's that?
Sounds good.
that works.
Very good.
If you all have questions, you know how to reach us.
And if we have any questions, thank you, Margaret.
You know.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Any public comment before we close off the meeting? Anyone in the public wants to make any comments? Any final comments from any of the members of the committee? All right. We consider the meeting adjourned. Thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow then. Thank you.
Or later tonight.